purpose of these reports, as the department's been quite clear on, is we need to get a baseline understanding. We know anecdotally that things aren't great. You hear about cultural issues, you hear about staffing problems or clinical governance issues or information governance issues, and the purpose of bringing in independent inspectors is to say, right, let's put a nail on this. Where is it? What are the problems? Where are the challenges? What do we need to fix? So this is a series of reports that are going to start coming out actually from the department, because it's the department that's commissioned these, to say, right, let's get a baseline understanding of where are we? What did we hand over to MaxCare, and where are the problems we need to fix? So when we got this report back as the department, it's a pilot report, this one. So the intention was to do a couple of pilots to make sure that the staff and the service was familiar with the CQC methodology, because again, it's the first time this has been done like this on the island. And then the proper series of inspections is going to be starting then later in the year. So when we saw this report, it was kind of what we'd expected to see, was it highlights some areas of good practice, it highlights some areas of bad practice, it reflects some of the cultural issues that I think we all know exist, it reflects some of the governance issues, some of the clinical issues. It was a report that we got back, and whilst it was concerning to read, if I'm honest, it wasn't a sort of in your face, oh my God, this is completely brand new information. I think MaxCare have been alive to a lot of the issues already identified internally through their processes. The department is aware of a lot of the challenges and problems anyway through our mandate assurance work. So this wasn't a big, massive surprise to us. It was a bit of a shock, I think, to see it all in one place. I'll say that. That's probably fair to say. But no, this is a routine part of our new the new model, really, is this regular external inspection to validate and actually get some facts on the ground when we start talking about the challenges we're all facing.
And Paul, was it similar for you?
Yeah, I had a mixed response, actually. Exactly as the minister said, I wasn't surprised by the findings of the report. In many respects, we had wanted to showcase those issues to the CQC so that we could understand how they would deal with them. So we've been upfront, open and honest right the way through. And I think that's the right approach to take. So to a large extent, I wasn't surprised. But when you read things in black and white, they are disappointing in some respects, because there are some things in there that we could and should have put right before the inspection. Little things like, for example, how we store chemicals that might be hazardous to health. Those were things that we should have got that right. So it was a mix of being, okay, this is a fair and balanced report, but also a bit of disappointment. We could have done better.
Well, you said there that you could and should have done that differently. Why didn't you?
I think there's a few things that the report, if you take the report in its totality, and if you imagine the scenario as a healthcare worker, it's a list of signs and symptoms, but not the cause. And I think when you step back and read the cause, there are three things that stand out for me, and they're like the golden thread through the whole thing. And the first one is staffing levels. It's very difficult when you read a report like this in the cold light of day to justify things. But when you're in the heat of the moment and you're perhaps one of three nurses on duty when you should have seven, and your patients are coming in thick and fast, and you're turning over your patients thick and fast, it's very easy to focus on your patients at the expense of things like where you put your stock, how you might do risk assessments, if you've got time to document things. So I absolutely understand that. So staffing for me is one of the golden threads. The other golden thread is leadership and teamwork. It's just not been that important for people to focus on it. And that's why I think in the way things are done, these things are overlooked, because they're not seen as being the most important things for people to do. And that for me is an issue of leadership and working together as a team. And then I think the third golden thread running through this is culture. We're working in an environment where it's a fragile service. There are tensions. Relationships sometimes are difficult, especially when it's very busy. And it's, we can't not overlook the fact that this is coming on the back of 3 years of COVID. And each wave of COVID was more intense than the last. The ED service never stops. And these people are there day in, day out, dedicated to that care. And, it takes its toll on people. And that can make the environment that people work in a little bit strained, a little bit more challenging, and relationships can be stretched. And I think all those three things are what link all the signs and symptoms in this report together for me. And that's why I think it's very important we take stock not necessarily having a knee-jerk response to when these things get reported, but asking ourselves, what are the underlying causes and how do we tackle them that then lead to a manifest change in those signs and symptoms down the line?
Now, you mentioned there the leadership and the culture. Those are two areas that this report says has been escalated to the Department of Health and Social Care. So what exactly does that entail?
The process for the reporting is the CQC commissioned by the department to come in. They produce these reports for our quality and safety team, so our inspections unit. Off the back of that, then, we feed the work into our assurance process, which means we engage with ManxCare on, right, these are some challenges. What is it you're going to be doing, ManxCare, to resolve them? And then it's up to us to monitor that and make sure ManxCare are progressing as expected. So the first thing the department did when we received this report was to write to ManxCare and say, right, these are the more immediate issues that come out of the report. How are you going to be resolving those questions? And so that's what ManxCare are working on at the moment, is producing that comprehensive response to say, right, this is what we're going to be doing and how quickly it's going to happen. And like I said, the CQC are coming back to inspect this particular service very shortly anyway, and so we'll be getting a fuller, more updated report as well in the near future. And it's always been the department's intention to publish all of our CQC reports that come in. We've been quite clear on that from day one. I think it's important that we show the Manx public that we are committed to change and committed to a transparent way of running things, which inevitably will involve taking the rough with the smooth, I suppose. You know, these reports aren't all going to be glowing. They will show some of the stuff that's going on that's working really well, but they will also highlight inevitably problems and challenges that we have to fix.
In terms of the issues with culture, the report mentions things like a lack of support for staff, their health and well-being, a toxic culture. It references at one point senior doctors being described as feral in the emergency department. These are, in a lot of cases, things we've heard before. It came up in Tynwald a few years ago now. Why hasn't it changed?
I think a part of that is, the culture of leadership, if I'm honest. And so what we have now with ManxCare is a new leadership team who are, and with the department actually as well, to be completely frank, and we're much more committed, I think, to resolving these problems, whereas what you've seen in the past is perhaps an attempt to underplay the significance and the seriousness of some of the challenges that are being faced. I know you've had the ManxCare CEO up here at the radio talking about these problems. I think Paul's been quite open and honest about the challenges that we're facing. When you see the government conference in a couple of weeks, big part of that conversation, I think Paul will be joining us on stage there to talk about some of these problems. We're quite open that this is a big challenge for the health service. I mean, you've got 3,000 odd staff working across the piece in health. It is going to be a difficult ship to turn. It's probably also worth highlighting that, as well as this being quite a big problem, like you say, we've known about it for a while, and so the content of the report really highlights, when we talk about cultural issues, the examples you've just given are examples of those kind of cultural issues that exist. So it's just putting a bit more meat on the bones as to what we mean when we say there are workforce and culture challenges in the health service. That report lays out in black and white, like Paul says, some very clear examples of what needs to change.
You mentioned there the changes in leadership. Leadership is still one of the areas being highlighted as an issue of concern. Do you have faith in that leadership team?
Absolutely, yes. You know, you have to understand the leadership team are working in incredibly difficult circumstances, and they're doing their very best. And what the report doesn't highlight, but the CQC inspectors fed back to ManxCare, was the dedication, the commitment and the passion of the staff. They turn up every day and provide that service for the people of the Isle of Man. And so absolutely do have faith in the leadership. But they're working with a set of circumstances that are really challenging and difficult. I mean, we talk about culture as if it's something we can just change. Actually, you don't change culture quickly. It's a slow evolutionary process that's built on relationships and trust and learning how to work things through together and overcome problems. But it's also not done in isolation from the environment that we work in. You know, we work in a challenged system, demand for care is growing, staffing is very challenging, the financial situation is very difficult. So all these things create a unique set of problems which are very difficult for leaders to overcome. So, and I think I've got all the confidence you would need to have in the leadership team in ED. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't help them and support them and encourage and enable them to be even better than they are. And that's exactly what we will be focusing on going forward, how we can strengthen that leadership team, educate them and enable them to deal with the challenges and work through problems and reach a consensus on decisions and involve and engage people both within the service and outside of the service on the key decisions. Those are areas that we will focus on. And in the fullness of time, that will help develop a different kind of working environment and a different kind of culture.
The report touches on a culture of bullying and blame as well. When you talk about staff shortages, seeing that in black and white in a report, is that going to harm recruiting drives?
I think it's kind of an open secret that, again, it comes back to, we know the health service on the Isle of Man has challenges and has problems. This isn't a secret. I've been banging on about this for years. We've had previous health ministers trying to highlight these challenges. This isn't new information. The key thing, I think, for any organisation is how you then respond to that and how you tackle these problems. And I think as long as there it can be seen to be change happening, and that we are being seen to take a very proactive, positive, engaging approach to this, and then that is creating the right environment to encourage more people to come and work, or even to retain existing staff, because that's a big challenge here as well. It's not just trying to recruit new people, it's trying to keep the very good staff that we already have, and we don't want them feeling like they've got no option but to leave because of the environment. And like Paul says, it's a slow journey. It is going to take time to change some of these behaviours and some of these processes and some of these systems, and it's not going to happen overnight. So what our job is, I think, is to provide that support and that leadership to show that things are changing, we are in a better place, we are moving along the road to the right place, but we have to acknowledge that that is going to take some time. And unless anything else you want to add to that, Paul?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, actually. It's not something that's going to change very quickly, but I think we just need to be thinking a bit deeper what we understand by the term bullying and what that actually means. Sometimes it's born out of frustration and a lack of control that people experience in their day jobs, and their passion for doing the right thing for people means they sometimes overstretch and overreach and come across in an abrasive way, or they might intervene in a way that somebody perceives as unhelpful. I think when you step back from some of that, what you really see is the dedication, the passion, the commitment for people to do the right thing. But they're working in a strained and challenged environment that makes it amplifies some of that experience that people have, and they will label it as bullying. It's not acceptable to me, and I don't think it's acceptable to anyone. And I actually don't think it's acceptable to the staff in the team either. But I think the benefit of a report like this is it gives us a chance to really have that discussion with colleagues. Let's be open. Let's be honest. Let's figure out how we respect one another, learn to work together, and crucially, learn to solve problems where there are differences of opinion. A lot of the labels that are assigned to bullying, in my experience in Manx Care, they often relate to differences of opinion that people find difficult to overcome. And I think that's where we need to focus our work. And the benefit of a report like this is it gives us a chance to have this conversation. It's in black and white now. There's no hiding from it. We can really move on it now.
Minister, you said there that you need to show prospective staff that there is this opportunity for change. Given that these are long-standing issues, do you think you're doing that?
I think yes. So I think it's been a difficult couple of years for the health service with COVID, and I think that hasn't created issues. I think it's exacerbated existing problems more than anything. And I think part of the reason for doing the independent report from Sir Jonathan Michael in the first place, part of the reason behind Manx Care, is to show that we need to do things differently, because the old model, the old way of doing things, wasn't working. Like you say, these issues haven't sprung up overnight. They've been allowed to continue because the structures we had weren't right, and they weren't working. So this move to Manx Care is almost a deliberate statement to say things absolutely have to change and this new model has to work. And I think what you can hear from Paul or from Teresa when you talk to her about these things is they're very committed to making these change. And I think what you're starting to see now is change on the ground. You are starting to see things improve, but it isn't the sort of thing that's going to be a radical shift overnight. It's not like waiting list initiatives where you can just throw a lot of money at the problem and try and make big cuts or big hits. Cultural change will take time. You know, some of the problems that are being faced are only going to be resolved by more recruitment and more retention. For example, you can't create nurses overnight, so there's all sorts of challenges that are interlinked with this. So from my perspective, I do think we're on the right path, and I think things are moving in a good direction, but like I say, these reports, this will be the first in a series of reports coming out that's going to be across the whole breadth of health and social care, and there will be complete variations in a theme, you know. And the one thing we have been talking to the CQC about is maybe at the end of the process is doing some kind of wrap-up report that talks about some of the broader themes, or the golden threads, as Paul would call them, that run through the whole service, to see if there are any consistent issues that really do underlie some of the problems. Because these reports, as Paul's already really outlined, they deal with the symptoms, they deal with the actual issue on the ground, but not necessarily with the underlying reasons that are causing those problems in the first place. That's where we as a department, as a regulator, need to step in, where Manx Care's board need to step in and actually try and resolve some of those baked in problems.
Now, the report asks 5 different questions as it goes along, one of which is, the service safe? And it says, we found that this service was not always safe in accordance with CQC's inspection framework. They highlight concerns over a lack of mandatory training being completed, cleaning practices, drug cabinets being left unlocked, medical equipment not always being serviced properly. How do you ask patients to trust the service when this report says it's not always safe?
And I think Paul's probably a better place to comment on some of those issues, but I think it's twofold, really. So the first element is this was designed as a pilot because we've never had a CQC inspection like this on the island before, and so inevitably there's going to be a learning experience where we do things slightly differently to how their methodology would suggest we should do it, so there'll be an element of that at play, I think. But also, if you read the content of the report, some of it is around, like you say, mandatory training, it's about record keeping, it's about the kind of the background work rather than the patient care itself, and that, I think, is quite critical. When the report does talk about patient care, they find that it's caring, it's compassionate, it's effective, and that's quite a positive message, I think, for me, is that where the report is highlighting problems around, like you say, patient care, it is highlighting those problems more around those background processes and the I'd like to say ancillary, but I know they're not ancillary, rather than actually the care patients themselves are getting on the ground. And I'm sure I haven't misunderstood that, but correct me if I'm wrong, Paul.
Yeah, I absolutely understand how the CQC organised their key lines of inquiry, which is what you're referring to. I have a little bit of difficulty with the word safe because it's an absolute thing. Actually, what the CQC are revealing is risk, that there is the potential for risk if we don't deal with some of those issues. When I look at a report like this, I have to balance it against other intelligence that we have, like, for instance, the amount of harms we experience, the number of people who complain, the number of people who return, what our outcomes are for major trauma care, for instance. And by and large, that's pretty good. So I think the CQC are right to raise the issue of risk. There are risks, and many of those risks are what I would call treatable. And we can and we will deal with them. And some of the risks are not treatable. Some of the risks are more problematic. Like, for instance, the supply of workforce is a much bigger problem than just that Manx Care can address. But there's a huge amount in here that Manx Care can and will address. And I'm pretty confident that by the time the next CQC inspection takes place in about 6 weeks' time, that will be the first proper inspection of ED. The first was the one we're talking about today was a pilot. I'm quite confident that will show substantial improvement and progress because we have taken the steps, because we can take the steps, and because we can make it less risky for people. And just to build on your point, Sean, I think, you know, one of the most important things for me is it's essential that we engage with our members of the public in a different way, engage and involve people so that they can understand the challenges that we're facing, but give us feedback. If they're not satisfied with the quality or the standard of the practice, we will act on that really quickly and put it right. And it's with that intelligence we have what we call continuous improvement. It's never static, is it? It's always evolving and improving. So if people see something that's not right, and the staff will be the same, you know, do something about it there and then. If you can't, we've got the MCAL service who will be able to help you navigate your way through. And if you can't do that, there's complaints, there's myself, there's Teresa, there's other members of the exec team. There's always people who can help address some of the issue. And I think it's that partnership between the staff, members of the public, members of the government and civil service and Department of Health. It's working together and collectively to determine what's acceptable and tackle what clearly isn't and make it better for people. And I think that's what we're all committed to doing.
You touched on there that the difference between something being unsafe and the risk perception. This report highlights that there were 3 medicine errors resulting in moderate or severe harm or death. There were also 17 medicine errors involving a high-risk medication. 6 of those were in 1 month, 5 in March this year, 3 in April. Does that, when people are being given the wrong medication, a high-risk medication, not indicate a service is at times unsafe?
I think healthcare is a very risky business. If anyone thinks it's not, they're mistaken. We deal with unpredictable conditions, people, challenging medicines. What might work for you with a medicine might not work for Laurie or might not work for me in exactly the same way. People are very different. So I think we have to recognise right from the outset that healthcare is a high-risk endeavour and it's not going to be risk-free. What's really important from the information you've shared with me there is that there is an openness and willingness to report these events when they crop up, because that will stimulate a conversation and a discussion around, did we do anything wrong? Did we not do something that we should have done? How can we make this safer? Do we need to flag this to the MHRA or some other external regulator? And I think I'm encouraged by what you've said, because it's very important that we have the ability to speak up when things are not quite right and we can learn from them. It's also fair to say that a lot of the data that was in the pre-existing incident reporting systems was not the highest quality, if I can say that. I wanted and encouraged the CQC to use that data because it's what we have. But their findings will help the leadership team really closely examine how they handle that kind of information to make sure it's accurate, it's reliable, and it's used for judgment purposes. So all in all, I think there's a lot of good has come out from that.
And I think that's something that I'd like to highlight myself, actually, is that we need people to report issues. We need the staff to feel empowered and comfortable that they can challenge practice, they can raise red flags where they need to. And that's, going back to comments earlier about a blame culture, something that we really need to get past is this idea where there is a risky situation, something has happened, that immediately somebody is at fault, where actually it may not be, it may just be that's the way things played out. Everything could have been done absolutely spot on right, but things still do go wrong. And I think we need to, that's the way we need to start thinking about these kind of reports and these kind of numbers and challenges that are being faced, is, okay, this represents a risk. Is there anything we can do to minimise that so it doesn't happen again, or it doesn't happen in the same way? And we need to make sure that staff feel comfortable reporting these issues and reporting some of the problems they're facing so that we can deal with them. It's very hard to deal with problems if you don't know about them. And that's kind of the main reason for having people like the CQC come in, is to highlight some of these problems, some of these challenges, some of the riskier areas, and ask those questions. What are you doing about it? And that's where then Manx Care step in and say, well, here's our plan. And that's kind of where we're going with these reports, is to publish them side by side with those plans, so that in future, when you see these reports, you won't have to ask us these questions about what are you doing about these problems, Paul? What's your plan? You'll be able to say, well, actually, it's here. It's right next to the report itself. And that's the main reason we're trying to do this, really.
Now, the five questions the report asks, four of them, it does mention that there is room for improvement. With the fifth one is the service caring. This very much an area that the report was more positive about. Given everything that is perhaps in need of some work, is it at least some solace for you that the performance of the staff on the ground seems to be very well received?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we opened our discussion today by acknowledging the kindness, the compassion, the commitment, the dedication. And that's precisely what that question is seeking to extract. And you know what? That gives me enormous amounts of encouragement and confidence that with people like that, with that kind of attitude towards doing the very best for our patients, we stand the greatest chance of being able to overcome these issues and build a resilient, safe service for people that everyone can be proud of. So I think it underlines the importance of the staff. You've got to have enough of them. You've got to have them with the right attitude and the commitment and the passion. And I think by and large, we've got most of that. We just don't have enough of them just yet.
Well, given what we've talked about around culture, are you at risk then of losing good healthcare workers if you can't fix those cultural issues?
Yeah, there is, without question, there is a risk that if we don't manifestly change the culture and the environment and the, you know, what it's like to work in that environment, yes, we will lose people, no question of that. And we will also fail to attract people. So it's absolutely essential and absolutely vital that we make changes that create an environment where it's nice to come to work, we do great things, it's enjoyable, we find it challenging, and we're learning, and it's a safe place to be. And that's exactly the environment we want to try and create. Now, I would add to that, Sean, that we've had some success recently in recruitment. We're about to have five new nurses join the emergency department team in the next few weeks. So I think already the message is getting out that we're serious about providing a compliant, high quality emergency department, and that there are people already wanting to come and work with us to build that and create an environment that is excellent.
There were within the report some discrepancies between what senior figures reported to the CQC and what those more junior level, those on the ground, said. Just one example of these, the chief nurse, how much time they spend on the ward seemed to vary depending on who the inspectors asked. Is that a concern that there seems to be perhaps a disconnect between the senior members and the more junior members of the team?
Well, it's not unsurprising. You do find that different people, depending on where they work in the organisation, will have a different perspective. I think the important thing for me is that, you know, we value and recognise the diversity of views and opinions, and everybody's viewpoint is valid. I know in this report it was critical that they don't see enough of the chief nurse. I have to say, I would challenge you to go to any hospital provider in the UK and find a chief nurse that actually puts a uniform on and goes to work shifts in ED as I do. But, the people that they spoke to perhaps haven't been the people that have been on the shift with me when I've done that. But I'm not dismissing their perspective. I think it's an important perspective, and I'd like to be able to do more to be on the ground in front of people. But I think the subtlety of the point raised in the report is a difference of view between the junior members of the team and the senior members of the team within ED, rather than it being an issue, a mismatch between the ED and the exec, for instance. And I think that is more concerning, because I do think there needs to be a lot more work done there to harmonise those views and achieve a consensus and a common purpose. And certainly if there are differences of opinion on things, they need to be ironed out and understood.
So we've touched on this a little bit already, but what happens next with this report?
Well, the next step is relatively straightforward. So there are some things that, which I think Paul's already acknowledged, can be done quickly and will be done before the CQC come back in October. The other problems in there are more longer term, and Max Care are putting together a plan as to how they will deal with those. When the CQC come back in October to inspect DD properly, you'll see a new report come out, which hopefully will show quite a lot of progress on a lot of measures, but will inevitably still deal with some of those longer term problems, longer term issues. I mean, one of the issues in the report is around the physical design of the A&E department needing to be changed. That isn't obviously going to be fixed by October, so there'll be all sorts of things which need to carry on. But Manx Care will produce that more comprehensive action plan, and like I say, the intention is to publish that alongside the full reports themselves when they're ready, so that the Manx public are absolutely clear on what happens next, what the next steps are. And from the department's perspective, we'll be keeping a very close eye on Manx Care through our assurance work to make sure that they are doing what they say they're doing, and so far they tend to, so I've got no concerns there. So the next steps on this really are now about how we action these reports and how we make sure that the changes that are needed to be made are being made.
If I can just build on that for a moment, 6 weeks from now we'll have another inspection of ED, and as I said, I am quite confident that it will be a very different report. I think people will want to showcase the best, be honest about the things that are not quite right, and be compelling in how we tackle those issues going forward. And I think for me, as a pilot inspection, this was helpful, but it is just that. It's a pilot inspection. The valid inspection is the one that comes in 6 weeks' time, and it's against that that we'll be able to do some detailed action planning and progress.
Where does the burden of responsibility fall here? Because you talk there about a Manx Care action plan. There have been two issues that have been escalated to the department. Who has to fix this?
Manx Care.
Yeah, it's very clear. Manx Care are the ones responsible for delivering the service. Manx Care have to fix these problems. The department can support, and we can act in that role to try and help support and provide resource if needs be. But mainly our job then is around assurance, is around that regulatory element of things, and not delivery of the service itself. So it's absolutely up to Manx Care to fix any problems that are here in line with the mandated services. And it's the department's job, like I say, to provide that assurance over the process, so that we can confidently tell Tim Wall, tell the council of ministers, tell the public that we're confident that the service is improving and that things are moving in the right direction.
And just finally, how important is that bit there about keeping the public informed? How important is it that they know how much progress has been made?
So I think it's essential. I think the Manx public are the service users ultimately. We're the people that go into A&E or go into Nobles or Ramsay MIU or wherever it happens to be as patients. And when you are a patient, you're at quite a vulnerable point in your life. So you need to be confident that everything is working as intended, that you're going to get the best possible care from caring, committed, dedicated staff. And so it's essential that the public are kept informed. Like I say, the plan for this has always been to be as completely open and transparent, to publish all of our reports alongside the action plans, and they will will be good and bad. You know, the intention was always to publish these reports in that way. It's also important we bring the staff along, because like Paul's already said, staff are critical, I think, to delivering any service, and especially when you look at the report and it reflects what we already know, that we've got challenges and problems, but actually the commitment of our staff isn't one of them. And so bringing them on board, making sure they are comfortable, that they understand where we're going, that this isn't about pointing fingers, this is about support and training and enhancing the service and trying to improve things for everybody. Really, there are so many important players in this, but absolutely keeping the public informed in the right way has always been part of our plan, and that's why I'm a little bit disappointed having to have to come up here and do this a bit on the hoof, really. But ultimately, it was always part of the plan. It's just moved our timetable up by a couple of months.
Yeah. If I can just add to that, I think from a Manx Cares point of view, we are totally committed to being open and honest with our public and with our staff. I think that's a really important part of the dialogue with the public, is the reality of what we're dealing with, what we can do, how long it might take, so that the expectation is matched by the reality. But if I can use this as an opportunity just to plug something which I think your listeners might be interested in, we are introducing a friends and family test. So if you attend hospital for any reason, there's an opportunity for you, using a very simple QR code, to give us your feedback there and then on what you thought that care was like for you. And there, from my point of view, whilst I measure so many things on quality and safety, the most important indicator of success is the service user satisfaction. So this is new, and I imagine, and it takes a bit of getting used to, but I want to encourage everyone to tell us what you think about the service you've just had, and we can work with that information to shape that service to meet your needs going forward.
And again, if anyone does want to talk about some of the more strategic issues, the bigger picture stuff, the government conference, which is happening in a few weeks' time, Manx Care are going to be doing a session. So we'll be on the stage doing a Q&A, but also there'll be a breakout session with Manx Care available if anyone does want to come along and talk about, well, where are we going? What does the journey look like? What are Manx Care doing about XYZ? What are their plans? What are their, you know, what's the vision for the future? More than happy to people just to come along and just chat. You know, all of this needs to be done in quite an open way. So let's engage with people as best we can.